The Beer EDU Podcast, Episode 89, Science from a Distance with Kim Calderon. Welcome to the Beer EDU Podcast, the podcast for educators that love to learn and share ideas with fellow educators over beers, with your hosts, Kyle Anderson and Ben Dixon. Hey, Ben, how's it going?
I am good, Kyle. How are you, my friend?
Doing all right. Just trucking along best we can in the old COVID 2020.
Yeah, we're really... At what point are we... Well, I guess in a couple of months, we get to say COVID 2021, which I'm not excited about.
No, and, you know, I just don't see... I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. I don't see anything on the horizon anytime soon, especially when you start hearing about cases going up and now... European countries are talking about locking down again. So it's just not good.
Yeah, it is. I was joking with my staff and we were doing something on staff training and I was telling them that I was going to hand out bingo cards and then they could like mark every time I said unprecedented building the plane while we're flying it. Let's see what else I have. Have grace. I got all kinds of them and I use them all the time. So I think it's unprecedented, though. I've said it like 1,000 times.
Nice. But you know what is good, Ben? This is the Beer EDU Podcast.
Yes,
and
it
is episode 089.
Yes. And we should have started with introducing ourselves. I am Ben Dixon. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at BDixonNV. And you, my friend.
Kyle Anderson. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at AndersonEdTech. And then I also have my blog, AndersonEdTech.net. Gotten a little slow on that one again. I'm actually working on 3 different ones right now. Bits and pieces. So I will be posting here soon. I just need to get them done. And then my book, To the Edge, Successes and Failures Through Risk-Taking. Find more out about that at totheedgeedu.com. And that's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and through my publisher, EduMatch Publishing. And because this is the Beer EDU Podcast, we like to have a beer when we're talking about one of our other favorite things in education. And Ben, you've got a really interesting sounding one tonight.
Yeah, so I went with, I had to go back. I'm pretty sure that I know it's not on our list. And I had to go back in my Untappd that I was surprised I had never had this one. It's Sierra Nevada's Fantastic Haze IPA. And it's a 9% ABV, 40 IBU. It's an Imperial Double New England is what they call it. So it's got that deep gold color with some cloudiness, and really juicy would be the way to describe this. It's, it's got a great, smooth taste, not overwhelming. I mean, 40 IBUs, not that much. But yeah, it's another good one from Sierra Nevada. So yeah, I was just shocked I'd never had it.
Yeah, I just checked our list and we've not had it on the show. So you're safe there at least. Not that we really care if we repeat beers. We don't like
we're to going repeat, to repeat at some point. Yes.
At some point we're going to, yes. And then I also looked and it looks like it might be kind of like a stronger version of the Hazy Little Thing.
Yep. Yeah. I would definitely say it's a little more than that, but not super, super crazy, overwhelming. So it's a good kind of a little bit of citrus and stuff. So similar to kind of what I think you have for us tonight.
Yeah, we did not plan this ahead of time. So, and after I saw what you had put in compared to what I am, like, wow, we are very similar. So, I mean, yours is amped up a little bit more at 9%, but I have Austin Brothers from Alpena, Michigan. I am running low on the Austin Brothers. So I think I've only got 2 more different ones that I'll be able to share on the podcast. So, but I have tonight their Tangerine Smoothie IPA, 6.5% ABV, 55 IBU. So kind of flipped around on that you're a little bit stronger on the ABV. I'm higher up on the IBU. Smooth, obviously, based on the name. Nice citrus to it, real nice citrus to it. And sometimes you get, like, there's a distinct flavor difference between an orange and a tangerine.
Right.
And sometimes beers or fruit drinks of some sort will say tangerine, but they're like, no, it's orange. This one is you can definitely tell this is tangerine because it has more of that like tart and pithy compared to what an orange usually is. It's nice and hazy, nice little like golden color to it. You can't see through it. Very crushable. I mean, this is
Okay.
This is borderline dangerous, this stuff. It's a good thing it's only 6.5 because you start putting some of these down, it could really catch up to you.
And I was starting to think, I've had, the only other tangerine I've had is the Lost Coast does a tangerine wheat.
That's a good one.
It's a good one, but definitely I think this is a different style, it sounds like.
For sure. This one,
it's an IPA. You
know, it's definitely more that hazy IPA one. Then also the smoothie part, this is one of those milkshake style ones where they add the lactose. Yeah. So you get that mouthfeel a little bit more on it too. And then you can't see it if you're listening because obviously we're audio format, but the head retention on it is real nice too. It's really sticking around on it too. So it's, cool. It's a good one. And I actually, when I checked it in on Tapped, I mentioned in my check-in that I was running low on Austin Brothers. I might have to arrange a shipment. So any of my Untapped friends or anybody in Michigan is listening, let's talk a little bit. I might need some more of the beers from Austin Brothers and Alpina.
Right on. Well, I mean, this would not be the beer EDU without beers and a guest.
Absolutely. So, we got a really good one that when I approached this person about coming on, I couldn't believe it took us this long to have her come on because Kim is absolutely amazing in everything she does. So welcome to the podcast, Kim Calderon.
Hey, guys. Hey, I'm excited to be here without beer. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. We do not discriminate against what people drink on this show. So we were joking about this ahead of time. You are a Diet Coke fan.
I am. I tend to have a very averse reaction to any form of alcohol where instead of any pleasure, I get automatic headache.
Wow.
So I tend to just kind of stay away. And, avoid.
Yeah, I like living my life without headaches. So, part of the reason I don't drink beer in copious quantities anymore because of that.
Right. It's probably also why I drink copious amounts of coffee in the morning because I don't like headaches.
the coffee definitely cuts those away very much so. So, well, welcome again, Kim, for joining. Great to have you. So tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, what do you do, what makes you tick? What makes you a nerd, as you put in your bio? Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So right now, this is my first year as a high school biology teacher. I taught middle school science before that. So I've taught 6th, 7th, and 8th grade science for 11 years. Started a STEM program, also taught assorted electives, multimedia, what else? Engineering, coding, did a lot with like tech and then integrating different pieces, coached like Science Olympiad plus Lego robotics and kind of worked those things in. And then last year I was actually an elementary academic coach for science.
Wow.
And it was great and it was a lot of fun. I have a lot of passion for trying to get more science into elementary school, but being an academic coach, I really just missed being with kids more.
Okay.
So I went back to the classroom because I just missed kids.
One of the main reasons I became a teacher was because of my high school biology teacher. So you're definitely in good company there with that. So, and then you mentioned Science Olympiad. I think my brother was part of that when he was in like junior high, maybe early high school. Is that the one where teams of students get together and they develop different things to compete in like Olympic style events at competitions?
Yeah, so there's like 15 different events throughout the day and kids compete usually in, so there's one big team and then kids kind of pair up for the events. And so we used to call some of the events were more like academic where it's, study and you take a test and some are where you build something, right? Like, so you build a bridge and then see how much weight it will hold. Some of them are build like Rube Goldberg type machines and see who's can actually do the most steps accurately. All kinds of different stuff. And then you accumulate points, but as a whole team. So you can win your event, but the goal is to obviously win like as your whole team. And then they progress up. So we do like county level and then state, and then those move on to a national competition.
Yeah, I haven't worked at a school in my career where we had a Science Olympiad because I don't know if maybe I wasn't paying attention or if it's more that the more I'm thinking about it, I think my brother did it more in like junior high. So I'm wondering if it's more maybe like a middle school kind of program instead of high school.
It can be. So it runs technically from 3rd grade all the way up to high school. Usually though, it takes a lot of hours as a coach. I mean, we used to start forming our team in September and competition was until March, you know? So it's a lot of work as a coach. And usually you need, at the high school level, it really helps to have multiple coaches. So if you can't get enough teachers on board to really do that, it makes it really difficult to have high school teams.
Oh, that makes sense then. So yeah, it's, I mean, anything in education is a time commitment, but when now you're talking about, it almost sounds like, you know, it's a sport. I mean, I coached sports for a long time and, you know, it just got to the point where as much as I loved coaching sports, the amount of time I put into it just took away so much from the family. So I can totally understand why in high school, especially where it may not be something that's as popular. So,
right.
Now, Kim, very similar to Science Olympiad, in my mind at least, you were very heavily involved in Science Fair as well in the schools that you've worked in. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So Science Fair is kind of just, it's a little more free form, right? So Science Olympiad, you've got very specific events that the kids are doing and there's like all these rules. I really like Science Fair because the kids get to get creative with it, right? Like they're coming up with their own experiment that they really want to explore. And then they're kind of like, as the teacher, you're really just guiding them along and giving them feedback, but they're really doing that experimentation. And they're usually really invested in it because it's something that they genuinely want to know about. And so like I had one student who his family, they did raisins and he wanted to know if the color of drying paper made a difference on how fast the raisins were drying the fields. You know, so something genuinely applicable to some, to like his family's business. And it was really cool. Like he walked through all those different, got to different papers and did different colors and this whole experiment with it. And you could see the actual impact of where this could keep going. And that's the other part of Science Fair I like is kids, you know, he did the first experiment as a sixth grader and kept building on it. So he discovered this type of, this color paper dried faster. So then the next year he took it to the next level, like maybe the thickness of that color of paper makes a difference and kept building on it. So you can see that progression with Science Fair and then really that, you know, just applicable real world connectedness.
So with Science Fair, did you see a lot of that where kids would compete like, or they would do it one time and then they get hooked into it?
So it's really nice because we start our science fair in Fresno County and starts with sixth graders. And it's really cool to because I would also, I coach my own kids, but then I would judge. And it's really cool to like see those projects that come back that have built on, like you remember it from the previous year and you can see like what the kid has done with it the next year and the next year. I mean, we've had kids that start as sixth graders and go all the way through 12th grade with just building on these projects.
So was this science fair competitive in nature or was it like, because the ones I'm remembering when I was in school was you did it at your school and it was more of like an excuse for parents to come in and see what you're doing in class kind of deal. And then my advanced bio class in high school, that was part of the, it was part of the class where you had to do these experiments and whatnot to put them on display. So from what you're saying though, it sounds like this is competitive and they're going against kids from around the county then.
Yeah, so you could kind of run it either way. I think it depends on how schools really want to do it. So Fresno County, the County Office of Ed, actually hosts a science fair for the county. So what a lot of schools in our area do is they'll have those school-wide ones pick their best projects that they then submit to the county level. Our winners from county actually go on to California State Science Fair. And then at the high school level, some of our winners from there will actually go on to the International Science Fair. And we've had some winners from Fresno actually win prizes at the International Science Fair level for some of the stuff that they've done.
That's super cool. So do you, how do you see that happening now in our current situation? I mean, is there a place?
So Science Fair happens actually in March. So literally like, things shut down and Monday was the day science fair judging was supposed to start. It was insane. And our science fair people at our county office were really great and they pivoted really fast. And so only judges came in. Normally we have students come in and we actually live interview them about their projects. So that kind of got scrapped. But we came in and judged, we picked our top ones and then we actually did phone interviews. So the kids were, you know, sitting by their phone and we called them and did interviews that way. And then State Science Fair did get canceled So that was a bummer for these kids, because a lot of them really look forward to moving on to that next level and continuing to compete. But this year, Science Fair is rolling again. You know, it's something that, because the kids are doing their experiments really on their own, for the most part, they can continue doing that. And we're still able to bring, like, if I needed a kid to come on campus for something, if it was one-on-one and the parents are okay with it, you know, okay, all safe and everything, but still to have them come on and do some experiments in order to collect that data. But most of it can be done, you know, trading emails, and Google is a huge tool for this, because we could, you know, share docs and look live and give feedback. And so we're still going strong with Science Fair this year. I'm sure judging is going to look a little different, right? We can't have kids in person again, I'm going to assume. So it'll probably be those phone interviews, but some of these kids work so hard. It's really heartbreaking to try and tell them, like, no, you've worked hard for this, you know, since October, and you can't get your moment. So we want to make sure that they can.
Is this something that is built into the classes where the kids build their projects and work on them in class? Or is this more of like an after school, I don't want to say club, but kind of a, that's kind of what I am saying actually, is where the kids would work on it outside of the class time.
So really it is. Like we encourage the kids and we would try to get them to do it, but it, because it is so much time beyond what's in your normal class, it winds up being that after school thing. And that kind of, we've had kids kind of excused to work on different parts. Like if I had a kid who needed to collect data during my class period and their project was at school, like I'd give them a couple minutes during class to go and do that. I was at a really small school, so the teachers were all really supportive of letting kids out of class for a little bit of time in order to do different pieces with Science Fair if we needed it. At my new school this year, I haven't, it's my first year, and it's a little weird for it to be your first year at a new school and you're virtual.
Like this.
Right? So we haven't gone for, I haven't broached the subject of Science Fair, but it's a it's a CTE-focused school. And so I really want to get our kids, because it's our Science Fair in Fresno, it's a science and engineering fair. Mm-hmm. So I really want to push our kids to look at Science Fair as a way to kind of do some of those engineering projects and build in all those CTE pieces that they're learning and really start making products that are, you know, useful for people.
Is this something that you envision that you can make into, say, the Genius Hour, where setting aside one of your class periods a week or once every couple of weeks to have students work on it? Or is it one of those deals where, because you're new at the school, you're not sure you want to necessarily talk about implementing something like that yet?
I'd like to, you know, because I think that for me as part of the school, and one of the cool things about the new school is we're really looking at like integrating our learning. So I think that's where I can hit something like Genius Hour. It doesn't always have to be in my class. Like me and the manufacturing teacher can tag team on it. And so maybe 1 week Genius Hour is during science, but the next week it's during manufacturing, right? And so that way it, you're not pulling all your time out of all your class periods, but we're able to pull from different ones to make it a little more feasible. And so nobody feels like, you know, that whole, I'm losing out on my minutes, but it's worthwhile.
So with your role as teaching science, I mean, how much opportunity, and I don't know, maybe because you're in a new school and is in a virtual situation, but how much time do you get to collaborate with cross-content teachers? Because I'm always curious about that. I feel like the social studies teachers, especially at secondary level, always get to collaborate with the English teachers. But I don't know about science. Like how much opportunities did you have or do you feel you're having now?
So my old school was a little different. Like I said, we were really small. There were four of us in our science department and we all had one wing. So we used to joke that we were in PLC like 24/7, because we literally would go in the hallway during passing period and it would be like, hey, I just tried this with my kids. This part didn't work. What do you guys got? Right? And we're like literally throwing ideas across the hallway to each other all the time. Now at my new site, so what they normally do in a regular year is one day of the week, the kids... actually that's when they have PE. And they have like, so for juniors, they all take welding. So that one day a week, they take welding and the rest of the teachers PLC and they get the whole day to PLC.
Wow.
right? It's pretty awesome. So right now it's a little different because of our situation. So we PLC from 1 to 4 on Wednesdays right now, but it's still really nice. Like our focus is on that collaborative and integrative piece. So whether it's all of us integrating or like I'm starting a genetics unit, so the math teacher and I are integrating on some statistics stuff that we're doing.
Cool.
English and I have been integrating a little bit because I've been trying to do some current event articles. Mm-hmm. So we're working with the kids on those pieces. But our structure is such that we really are trying to push that integration because, I mean, that's the world these kids are entering, you know? Right. Like, it's not like, oh, wait a minute, boss, I got to stop writing this report because English is over and I'm done and I got to move on to something else. Like, that's not right. How the world works.
Well, and I feel like in my experience, science is such a hook for some of our kids, especially our non-readers, that they're like so hooked into it that it's just it's a perfect gateway to like literacy. And I mean, and I just know writing a science report or any kind of science paper is way different. As an English major, I could not do it. I'll just leave it at that.
Well, and I did a spotlight session for Fall Q and it was all about using science as like your base, like doing integrated units, but science is your base. Cause that's how you get kids excited, right? Like I look at my own kids and they're super excited to do science. You know, my middle one checked every book he checked out last year from the school library was a nonfiction book about animals. He's obsessed with animals. And so I look at those kind of kids and I'm like, this is how we hit some of these pieces. I mean, I gave my students at one point, we did a whole thing on genetics and we ended with genetically modified food. They had to research. We talked about like bias in sources because if they were looking at all these different websites. They researched, we had a debate and they wrote me an argumentative essay either for or against. And I shared it with our academic coach. And at the time she's like, she turns and looks at me. I'm like, what, are they that bad? She's like, no, their problem is they're that good. Like these kids wrote better essays for me in science than they did for their English teachers. And I went back and asked one of the kids and one of them, and he was the English teacher's son, was like, what's the deal? Like, why are these better? And they're like, well, cause we actually cared about this. Like you made, like we learned about this, we are invested, we cared. So we wanted you to know what we learned about these topics.
I could totally vouch for that because I like to write. I mean, I write a blog and I wrote a book. So, I mean, I have a little bit of a love for writing, but I'm also a lover of science. In fact, my first major was a science major. I was a bio major, chem minor, but I pivoted and moved to social studies down the road because that was another love of mine. But I distinctly remember in college in a kinesiology class, which is a class that a lot of people are like, oh, this is terrible. Why do we even have to take this or whatever? I found it fascinating for one, just like the science behind body movement and whatnot. And we were given an assignment to write a paper where we had to break down like a sports movement and then the bones and the muscles involved and everything that was behind and the chemistry behind all of it, how it worked. And we were told that it had to be 10 pages or more. There was no limit on the top, which we can get into a debate about like the limits on paper writing or whatever and how stupid it can be, but I digress. That paper ended up being almost 25 pages by the time I wrote it because I got so into it. And I still remember the subject. I played football and it was pass blocking. So the kicking back motion and then the punching motion of blocking on the football field in pass protection. And like I said, it was supposed to be 10 pages at least. And I wrote 25 because I just got into it. So those kids that are writing those essays, I can totally get behind that. And then my kids now, my son, anything animal related or dinosaur related, he's eating that up. And my daughter, she's really starting to get into cooking. And a lot of people don't realize cooking and baking, both just the science behind those things, you know, especially in baking, where if you don't have exact measurements, you get something totally and completely different. So but I did want to back up a little bit, though, when you were talking about the cross-curricular stuff. So now you mentioned science and math you've been working with a little bit. So what kinds of things are you doing with the math teacher at this time?
So we just ended, we did some stuff with rates of reactions for photosynthesis and respiration. And it kind of worked really nice because he was in the middle of doing things with like slope of lines. And I mean, all the slope is a rate. So we kind of were tying that in together and just really like putting that together for kids of like, hey, look at like, this is the exact same thing. Cause most kids aren't going to make that connection on their own. It's just not going to happen. And so a lot of it is not even like the skills, it's using that same vocabulary, right? Like sitting with those teachers of whatever subjects and coming down to like, hey, I call it this and you call it this. Can we come to a consensus on what we're right. both going to call it? So the kids start to make those connections. Oh, wait a minute. The rate and the rate, that's the same thing. Like you see, sometimes it's as simple as that. Like people sometimes think like doing this integrated piece is this huge, massive thing, and it can be, but sometimes it's as simple as just changing your vocabulary you're using.
That's, wow. And that's, I think that's super important. I think you're exactly right. I think people think, okay, I have to integrate. I'm going to do science and my math unit. Like if you're doing project-based learning or something like that, and it's like, I have to have all these connections. And you're right. Maybe it is just, how about we just call it the same thing? Because then it provides a real world context for that kid. Because I know having taught rate to sixth grade, like it's so abstract mm-hmm. to them until they actually have to do something where they measure it.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. And so now we're heading into genetics. So he's going to start mm-hmm. talking some statistics pieces, you know, but the kid, it'll be nice because the kids are going to have actual, you know, we're going to make the Punnett squares and do all the typical genetics mm-hmm. pieces. And then I'm sending home their taste test strips. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to try and test as many family members as they can. It's a little bit harder because some families aren't seeing extended family mm-hmm. as much as they normally would. And then I'm actually making my whole staff use them so we can get some numbers, right? And figure out like, okay, based on these numbers, what can we draw? Like, right? What statistical analyses can we do? So I'm focusing on collecting all the data. And then in his class, they're analyzing the data, right? Which is nice for me too, because then I'm not spending extra periods teaching all these math concepts because he's going to do that part. Mm-hmm. And I can focus more on the bio piece and draw them together.
Well, and Ben, you hit the nail on the head a couple moments ago about making the real life connections to where you could sit in math class and talk about slope intercept form on a graph or whatever, and it means absolutely nothing. And then the age old question, when am I ever going to use this, comes up. Mm-hmm. But then as soon as you make that connection with what you're doing with respiration and rate mm-hmm. in your class, Kim, then all of a sudden it starts making sense and those connections can be made. And I mean, I haven't done math in a long time and now I'm teaching it, which is, I'm having a lot of fun with it. I work with an amazing person. She is absolutely incredible in the craft of math. And I'm starting to find like, holy cow, I really like this again. But there's so many kids that hate math because they don't have right. that connection. And because so many kids do love science, there's an easy way to connect right there. But other ways to connect science, as a social studies teacher by trade, I'm thinking about ways you can get science and social studies together where, whether if it's an economics class, when you're talking about like, maybe you're talking about funding for different scientific programs and the effect that could have on it. When in a history class, the scientific discoveries of various people and the effect they had at the time and how they still affect today, those kinds of things. So, I mean, we could have an hour long conversation just on how to connect things right now. And because I think it's awesome what you're doing.
Thanks. We have fun. And I mean, my whole goal is to really show the kids, like, cause you're right. I mean, they get that whole, like, unless I'm going to be a major in some kind of science, right. like really, why do I care? And so that's kind of what I'm at least trying to show them right now is like, this is how it actually applies to you right. and why you might want to care. At our school, our focus is CTE and we focus on manufacturing and construction. Mm-hmm. So my class is actually environmental biology. So we're really okay. gonna, after we hit genetics, we're starting to focus on those ecology principles. And you know, when I'm building a house, what kind of materials right. do I wanna use? And what impact are those, are mm-hmm. me using those materials having on the environment? And when I build something, you know, am I building in an area that's going to have an impact? And why do I care about how that impacts, you know, either wildlife mm-hmm. or other things and all those kind of pieces. So really trying to draw it into, you know, these kids came to this school for the CTE part.
Right.
And so why should you care about the science? Well, this is how it actually does affect your CTE part.
Well, and you said something earlier too, where you talk about bias in articles. So looking at like, cause we all read all these things and like wherever you get your news source from is that, that critical skill that I think kids need and maybe and adults need it too, is like, how do you identify bias in an article? And I think science is such a great place for that. Cause there's always going to be, I feel like there's always going to be two sides.
I always tell the kids, I'm like, give me your data and tell me what you want it to sell to say, right? Because you can. I mean, I can read articles with the same data, and it's all about, we talk so much about like choosing which type of graph you're going to use, because it's going to make a difference how you present, right? Like, and using those pieces. And it was like, guys, I'm not going to tell you one way or the other what to believe. I just want to make you conscious consumers of the information. So you can look at both sides and make a real decision based on that, and not based on what you hear from other people or all these other sources. Like, you need to make your own decisions.
I'm sorry, I had a great question, but all I could think of after taking data and twisting is whatever was just the line that a certain somebody said a few months ago about how if we weren't testing as much, then the rates of COVID-19 wouldn't be going up so high. And now I completely forgot my question.
What? That's not true.
So, but anyway, so I, yeah, let's get away from that, that part of things a little bit there.
Got sidetracked there, man.
Yeah, just a tad. So now, Kim, you're also involved in not just science related things, but well, robotics is science too, but it's just a different, it's its own unique kind of science. So especially with the Lego robotics. Yes. So let's talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So, so I started, or I got to start a STEM program at my old school for our middle school kids. And one of the things we wanted, like, we already had Science Olympiad and Science Fair, but in talking to the kids, you know, some of them are like, you know, I'm not really into that piece of it. So I started looking at robotics, because that's another, you know, a branch of science that kind of is at the, you know, it's getting more traction. And so really looking at getting these kids into something that can translate at some point, you know, into that computer science piece. And it was really cool, because I will be on, I knew nothing about it, right? I'm like, we are signed up and I bought the kits and we're gonna figure this out together, because I have no clue what I'm doing. And it was like, these kids were amazing. Like, I literally gave them a robot and gave them a computer with the program, and I'm like, figure it out. Cool. And it was so cool to watch them do that. And like, they were teaching me, because I was, and I think that's what they liked about it too. Cause I was super honest. I'm like, guys, I really can't help you, because I genuinely don't know what I'm doing right now. And so we all learned together, and then they totally surpassed me really fast. But it was great, cause they were so excited, right? When the robot does what it's supposed to do, they're just ecstatic.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was also really cool, cause they're building arms. And then I started, I'm like, oh my gosh, you're building an arm and it needs to grab something. And we started making those connections as we're looking at like human anatomy, right? And how your muscles work and how your bones work. And it never had occurred to me that I could teach anatomy through robots.
Oh, wow.
Like, I never had made that connection until we started doing that stuff with Lego robotics. And then I started doing it. Like, I had enough robots that my whole entire class had to make arms that would grasp and then compare it. Like, we did a whole comparative anatomy lesson using robotics, and the kids were so excited because they're programming these robots and building them, and it's Legos, and who doesn't love Legos? You know, it was just all those connections that came up just because I'm like, we're gonna start a Lego robotics team.
I can think of worse ways to spend my life, playing with Legos all day and then turning them into robots. That sounds incredible. So, and that is the connection there you mentioned about human anatomy, and that as soon as you said that, I'm like, no, there's no connection there. But then I got thinking about like just the little fingers on the robot arms. And yeah, you have to program that, much like your brain is programming your muscles to do the same thing. I mean, that's perfect right there with if you're doing an anatomy class. So if you're teaching human anatomy out there, listeners, I think you need to talk to Kim about this right now, because that's a great connection.
Yeah, and there's also a lot of stuff now too with even like prosthetic limbs and how they're embedding the different sensors directly into people's brains to then control their limbs right? Mm-hmm. So now you really are combining that robotics with the bio and the neurochemical, and it gets all kinds of crazy. But I'll tell you, like, my kids were so invested. It was amazing. And then one of the coolest parts about Lego robotics is there's always, like, you have your robot and that's part mm-hmm. of your thing. But the other part is also a challenge the kids are trying to,
right.
to work on. And one of my groups, we had done this amazing thing with a program called Solar Suitcase, where we built these suitcases that get sent to Africa. And they provide solar power for schools and orphanages in Africa. So my kids got to build this whole thing, did all the wiring, all the electrical, it sent to Africa. And then they took that on as part of their Lego project. They wanted to, it was all about water filtering.
Oh, wow.
And they came up with this great idea of, like, instead of, because in Africa they have a huge problem with clean water, they're like, what if we could make it so as the water is traveling, it's actually filtering as it goes through these pipes? And we use some of the solar power and ultraviolet rays to make this happen. And it was prototyping, so they didn't have to come up with, you know, the full thing. Right. But because of that connection with the solar suitcase people, we are able to talk to people actually in Africa to get their feedback on, like, how this would work. And these kids were so invested, like, their robot did great, but I was so excited about this project that they really got so into, and it was all because of just, you know, our little Lego robotics team, but really got these kids thinking globally, which, I mean, for eighth graders who are very much all about me, was huge.
Well, and that giving back to community, that, like, using science as a tool to help, you know, it's to help other people. That's super cool.
Yeah, I was really excited about that project. We didn't win the full prize, and they were super bummed about that. But I was like, guys, it was incredible.
What was the winner of the prize then, if that didn't win?
I don't even remember. My kids were really upset.
They were just bummed because they didn't win.
Yeah.
They were. I mean, like, and we made it because you have to, for robotics, there's, you know, like, those smaller competitions, yeah. Then you get to the next one. So we had made it to regionals. And that was where they got beat out by someone else, but it was just a really cool project. And, like, just to see that, and it was really theirs. Like, I helped get the connections, but all the brain power and all the figuring the pieces out, it came from them. And it's just one of those cool things to watch kids in action and see what they really can do when you give them at least just a little push.
So with this solar suitcase, I'm envisioning, so is it something like small, like a suitcase, obviously, with solar panels on it, and then it gives you the ability to plug things into it to power them then?
Yeah, so it was like, so they had small ones, like little mini ones that they used, and then they had bigger ones. And so the solar panels actually were separate, so they're not on the suitcase. The suitcase actually gets mounted to the wall, and it's basically like, almost like the power inverter, in a way, up on the wall. But then it has, you know, places where you can, it's got the like the cigarette lighter adapter, so you
right.
can plug in different chargers, and it had actual outlet plugs. But it was really cool because then they go on these roofs of these different schools where these schools don't have power. So as soon as the sun goes down, these kids they're done and they can't study right. and it's hard. And so this way it gave them those power sources. And one of them is one of the schools. It was the only power source in the whole little village.
Wow.
And so people would go to be able to, you know, charge their devices or whatever mm-hmm. they had and that kind of stuff. And it was just really cool. Like, they send you back pictures, and my kids were so excited to get to see, like, oh my God. Cause they put, like, they send you all the components, but you put it together. So we did a whole, like, electricity unit, learning about these different components and what they were going to do. And then just for my kids to actually get to see, like, we made this thing, and it's now helping this, like, whole village in Africa to get power, was pretty awesome.
I was envisioning something a little bit different. Yeah, that's a little bit more high tech than I had originally thought of it was. I almost thought of it more of like just like a mini power pack that was just like, you know, some solar panels that you could like it here in the United States. I'm picturing like you're out camping and you could just like put this out alongside like your camper or something like that kind of deal. No, so
more robust than that, I think, just for the purpose. So they started as the founder's wife was a doctor, and so they started as just places, like they would go to different places that were, you know, with hurricanes or things like that. And it was for hospitals. And then they took it one step further. They actually, for a while, were partnered with PG&E. So PG&E actually funded like a bunch of teachers. We went to PG&E in Sacramento for like a week and learned how to put everything together, learned all the science that went with it, and then got to take them back to our classrooms and actually build them with our kids. Unfortunately, PG&E has some financial issues and no longer fund it, which is a bummer.
So with your role in science now and doing science distance, how's that working?
It's been rough. You know, I mean, science is so, especially with the NGSS standards, it is right. So hands-on, right? I mean, yeah. The focus went from students will know all this information to students are actually doing stuff now.
Right.
I mean, if we were in the old standards, it'd be super easy right now, right? I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to lecture every day and you're going
to read the science book.
Know some things.
Yeah.
But it's not like that, right? And science shouldn't be like that. I mean, there's a reason why in college, when you take science classes, you've got like 6 hours worth of lab for the week. And so I've been sending home labs with kids.
Okay.
So we've been doing supply pickups once a month. So I get together a baggie of stuff that I can send home. So we did a couple osmosis labs. I sent home potatoes and gummy bears, which when you tell your brand new boss you've only known for like 2 months that you need potatoes and gummy bears, he looks at you a little weird. But so we did a whole osmosis thing with potatoes and gummy bears that the kids set up at home and they took their data. This last round, we were doing photosynthesis and respiration. So I sent home yeast and spinach, and I rolled up pieces of saran wrap around a straw because I'm like, I don't want anyone telling me they can't do the lab because they don't have the materials.
Right.
Like, because everyone's in different situations. Mm-hmm. We have one family who is living with friends right now because their house was burned down during the Creek Fire. Right. Like, we've got kids everywhere. Right. So I'm like, I'm sending home as much as I can. I try to make it so all they have to get from home is water.
Okay.
Like everything else. And then we go through the lab together. Like we set it up together as a class. I'm doing it live and most of them are running it when they can. Some have to run it a little later because of whatever's going on at home. I've had a couple parents who are overenthusiastic with cleaning up. So I get kids who message me like, my mom accidentally threw away my experiment. It happens. That's okay. We discovered this week that a lot of these kids, their parents are like me and they don't turn on the heater in their house. So they're over there like, my yeast isn't doing anything. I'm like, your house might be too cold.
There we go.
But I always collect data and then I share it with them. So if something happens, like I always tell my kids, I'm like, I'd love for you to do it in person because you're going to get more out of it when you're doing it yourself. But if you can't for whatever reason, you know, here's my data so you can still analyze the data. But a lot of them are doing it. And they even were like, you know, thank you. Even though it didn't work out the way I needed the lab to work out, like I still had fun doing it. I'm getting to do something, which I think they appreciate instead of, you know, staring at the screen.
Yeah, definitely. And I think about, I mean, so many of the parents are most likely very supportive of doing all that stuff. But I do got to think back to when I was in school, I had to have done chemistry from a distance like that. My poor mother, because I was that kid in chemistry, mixing the chemicals to see what would happen and then lighting stuff on fire that I should not be lighting on fire. And I got this one story about how I probably should have gotten expelled based on what I was doing with mixing chemicals and turning up the flame on a Bunsen burner, but we won't get into that right now. But
in some school in Michigan, there's a burn mark on a ceiling, right?
No burn mark on the ceiling. The teacher stopped me before I did, and then my witty response got me out of being sent away. So we'll just say that much. So. Yeah. Now, Kim, we could talk for hours about all of this stuff, but at this point, we are starting to get towards that time where we got to start kind of wrapping things up a little bit. So with our listeners, how can they connect with you on social media or in any other way?
So I'm on Twitter @CrazySciTeach. And I think I still have a website. It's been a while, obviously, so it may not be super up to date if you go there, but it's crazyscienceteach.org, I believe, right? I should probably check that. I know it's .org. I just know, I think, yeah.
So, well, either way, we'll double check and we'll put the correct one in, whether it's .com or .org or .net or whatever it may be. We'll put that in the show notes.
A lot of that is from it's stuff though, if you're doing science with little guys too, because I used to do a whole STEM carnival with K1 kids.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So there's a bunch of stuff on there about K1 too, because that's my other part is I love teaching it to the older kids, but I really like helping teachers get it down in that lower grade levels, because I feel like that's where you start those connections and you start that love of science. So many kids, I feel like, start out super excited about science, and then because what they're doing in elementary either is like non-existent or maybe not that great, they lose it by the time I get them in middle school and high school, and trying to build that love back is hard.
I'll have to check that out, because I got a little kindergartner that has a lot of energy that I would love to get going on that kind of stuff. So, well, yeah, Ken, thank you so much for joining us. Ben, were you able to confirm that website?
Yes, it's crazyscienceteach.com. You should check it out.
I don't think that's me.
Nah, are you sure? I don't know if maybe it isn't you. I don't know. Kim Calderon. I don't know. Maybe there's somebody else with you. They're impersonating you on Twitter.
And there should be.
No, I think that is.
Is it? Okay. I thought I bought the .org, but I did buy the .com.
Yeah. So yeah, you have like a bunch of stuff like Science STEM, Student Voice. That is super cool. You should go check it out. She's got a bunch of stuff on there. Now I'm going to get totally sidetracked playing with the website.
Yeah, now I've got it up now too. Okay. So we are.
Yeah, we're going to put it in. So if you like, you're listening to this, check on the show notes. We have the link. It'll be in the show notes. But definitely, looks like there's some really good resources on there, including lots of Google tools stuff. So perfect.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. So, listeners, let's keep this conversation going. Share some of your thoughts on today's topics by emailing us at info@beeredupodcast.com. Tweet us using beeredupod hashtag. Hit us up on Facebook at beeredupodcast, all one word. Follow us on Instagram at beeredupod. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at bit.ly/beeredu YouTube. Be sure to follow Kim at crazyscienceteach on Twitter, and then also crazyscienceteach.com, the website. Voice message using the Anchor app. We'll put it on. We haven't had one of those in a really long time. We need one. Leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcast so more can find it. And Ben, if you would like to be a guest on the show, how does that happen?
Yes, please hit us up on our website, www.beeredupodcast.com. So go there, you click on that contact and subscription info link, and then you complete our guest form, and we would love to have you on, get you in the queue, talk about what you're passionate about in education. And if you have a beer, great. If not, also great.
All right. Kim had a Diet Coke, yes. So it's all good.
There we go. So Kim, this is the part where please stick around. This is the part where Kyle's going to do some teaching for us. So we're going to learn about a little bit about some beer. Kyle, what do you got this week?
This is another one of those, I can't believe we haven't done it deal. So, but we're looking at this week, what is a cream ale? So now, disclaimer right from the start, when people hear cream ale, they think it has some sort of cream or dairy product in it. Not the case. There's no dairy, there's no cream involved in a cream ale at all. So the reason it's called that is because of the mouthfeel you're getting from it. It's kind of creamy feeling on the mouthfeel a lot of times, but it's an American ale. And the website where I found our information, I was a Wikipedia post, and then I did a little digging off some of the links on there, a cross between a German lager and a British ale. So kind of like a marriage of those two different styles of beer. They tend to be straw to golden in color. They're very light and refreshing. Hops and malt flavors that are very subtle. The ABV is usually between 4% and 5%. So nice and light. IBU is very low, 5 to 20 at absolute most typically. It is top fermented. It's an ale for the most part, but sometimes brewers will add some lager yeast to it as well in order to cut back on the fruity esters a little bit more. Or what they'll do if they don't add the lager yeast to it. They will age it. They'll lager it at a lower temperature than typical to cut back on that stuff too, to make it a cleaner beer. So because sometimes the ales can have that, you know, those fruity esters and can be a little bit heavier. It makes it a little bit more clean on the finish when you do that. So, and then what they'll also do, they'll use corn or rice sometimes as part of the grain bill to lighten the body up a little bit. But typically a lot of them, they are all barley when it comes to the grain bill. And then now cream ales, they're starting to get, a lot of brewers are starting to add various fruits and spices to give a lot of unique takes on that style as well. So now I did find a handful of ones that I know I've had before. These are more regional. Like there's not a lot of cream ales that are like, you're not going to be able to pick one up in Nevada and then go to New York and get the same one.
Yeah.
Kind of deal. No.
I know. And I'm now that you said that, I don't think there is a what I can't think of a bigger, even your bigger craft breweries that like will can or bottle, these, you know, for wide distribution.
No, like, see, you think Sierra Nevada is the big one out west here, and like, do they have a cream ale? And I couldn't find one, so I don't think they do.
Don't think they do.
So the ones that I found were New Glarus, which is in Wisconsin. They don't distribute outside of Wisconsin. They have one called Spotted Cow. And years ago, when I was in the Midwest, my buddy and I, we did a beer exchange, and he brought me an entire 24 pack of that stuff and sent it home with me. And it's really good. So Abita, which is near New Orleans, they make one called Creole Cream Ale. I may have had that one at one time. I do like a lot of Abita's beers. Genesee Cream Ale is probably the quintessential one. That's out of New York. I've never had that one. Have you been?
I have had that one.
Okay.
And I've had that one. Actually, I think I had it back east somewhere. Maybe in New York. It's not one I've ever seen here, but I have had that one. I have to look at my Untappd.
Yeah. The big one here in the West is Mother Earth's Kelly Creamin'.
Right.
That's a cream ale that they add vanilla to, and it tastes like a vanilla cream soda.
Yes.
So that's a really, really good one. One of them that I found, I remember having years ago, I remember being really good, but it's hard to get a hold of. The town where I went to college, Marquette, Michigan, has a brewery called Black Rocks. And they make one called Grand Rabbits. And I remember having that one and remembering it being very, very good. And I had kind of forgotten about it until I found this list of cream ales. And then another one here, California, Nevada area, Anderson Valley out of Boonville, Cerveza Crema.
I've had that one.
One that they have. I've had that one. So that's another one, Anderson Valley. If you've never been to Boonville, make that trip out there and go to the brewery. That's a fun little brewery right there. It's in a barn.
Yep. That's a good one. That is a tasty one. You know who else I was just looking, and I think I've had this one. Ballast Point does a cream ale.
Oh yes.
So they do Calm Before the Storm.
Oh yes. I forgot about that one,
which actually I think you might be able, that's one, because Ballast Point does pretty good distribution out west, so does Anderson Valley.
Yes. I have had that the Calm Before the Storm. I'm wondering why that one didn't show up on my list when I was looking.
But you're right. I think to your point is, I don't think they're as popular. They're not as available, like as a stout or you know, definitely not like an IPA, but you know, you got to look for one of these.
Yeah. But again, we were talking about the gateway beers a while back, and I definitely believe that this one can be a gateway beer. Yeah. So if you're not really into beer yet, or if you're used to just drinking the macro lagers and whatnot, these are similar enough and light enough that where it could be a good way to get you into drinking something different.
Good point. Yeah, no. So definitely ones that, like you said, I'm surprised we haven't talked about these.
Yeah. So we got a few more on the list too, that we're looking to do pretty soon, that I'm sure we'll probably have the same reaction. We haven't done that one yet. No. Good stuff. So, as we're wrapping up real quick, I just wanted to say that the last couple episodes, we've had a gap, a week off between. And that was a talk that Ben and I had about the show a little bit, about how we've just got so much going on right now. I know what you're thinking. No way. Not during these times.
What?
So
it's so calm right now.
Right. So it's calmer than it was, but we're still very busy. That. So, but we decided to roll back and do more of a bi-weekly rollout with episodes. So if you were wondering why episodes weren't coming out every Saturday, like we had been for a long time, that's a reason why. Ben and I just, we need to take a break every now and then.
Yeah. Yeah. And on those, hey, and we encourage you on those weeks that we don't release one, go back and listen to some old ones. We got
for sure. So, and Ben and I, we had talked about maybe doing some beer tastings with Beer Review podcast for the YouTube channel. Maybe I'm just spitballing right now, but maybe that's something we can release on Saturdays instead, because those will be 5 minutes versus, you know, the hour that you're used to hearing us in your ears.
We say they're 5 minutes, but they might be long. They might be.
You never know. It depends how good the beer is, I guess.
Exactly.
So, that's 89.
Hey, yes. Yeah. That's it. And Kim, thank you so much for being on the show. It's awesome to talk to you.
Oh, thank you guys for having me. This is great.
Yeah. Like I said, at the top of the podcast, I can't believe it took us this long to get you on.
I know.
So, and listeners, thank you as always. And until next time, may the malts and the hops be with you.
Right on.